Greetings, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. Welcome to the Brian Dainsburg Podcast, Christian Living in a Complicated World. I'm your host, Brian Dainsburg, lead pastor of Alliance Bible Church located in beautiful Southeast Wisconsin. I'm going to kick off today a two-part series called Feelings, Justice, and Cancel Culture. And it's going to take a little bit of patience on your part to allow the pieces of the puzzle to get on the table and then to see how they fit together. This podcast is, this part one is influenced tremendously by Carl Truman's book, The Rise and Triumph of the Modern Self, which those of you who are blog readers have read my blog and know that that was the number one. I put that as number one read of 2020. An excellent, excellent work. It's Truman, you know, for those of you who maybe don't have as much time to invest in reading lengthy literature, because it's a long book, an involved book, he has a simplified version of it coming out in early 2022. So you can keep an eye out for that. But today, I want you to think about three cultural artifacts. Okay, so the structure of this talk is around three cultural artifacts. We're going to think about, number one, job satisfaction. Number two, the impact of technological advancement. And the third is Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. I know it sounds like they have nothing in common with each other, but hang with me here. Hang with me. Again, the title of this podcast is Feelings, Justice, and Cancel Culture. You got to be patient, let all the pieces of the puzzle get on the table, and then we'll start to try to organize them. This is two parts. The second part will, I think, be wonderfully clarifying to you, but we have to address the foundational elements of this first. So these three cultural artifacts. Let's start with job satisfaction. If you're old enough and you were going to go and ask your grandfather, if he's still around, Grandpa, back in your day when you were working, did you have job satisfaction? Like if I was going to ask my grandfather that, who passed away several years ago, I was to go back in the 1950s and 60s and say, hey, Grandpa, do you have job satisfaction? I'm not entirely sure he'd understand the question. If he did, he would probably say to me something like, well, I've got food on the table. I've got clothes on my kids' backs. I've got a roof over our heads. Yes, I have job satisfaction. That's how he'd answer the question. If we ask that question today, what kind of response are we likely to get? Well, you'll hear things like, I like what I do. What I'm good at, I get to do in my job. I like the people I work with. You'll get these sorts of answers where there's kind of an emotive language put to it. I like. For my grandfather, job satisfaction was empirical. It was outwardly directed. And it was unrelated to his psychological state. For my generation and subsequent generations, the issue of feeling is central. Outward institutions, whether they be marriage, family, job, church, become servants of the individual and her sense of well-being. Our involvement with and relationship to these institutions are based on a simple question. Will involving myself with this serve my mental and emotional well-being? Now, there are numerous modern thinkers who have noticed this development. Okay. Truman doesn't come up with anything new here. I'm not coming up with anything new. Charles Taylor, Alistair McIntyre, Philip Reif, Christopher Latch, all of these thinkers have written about this phenomenon. And they all use different labels to capture this. Charles Taylor uses the term expressive individualism, which we'll look at in part two. They all use different labels, but at the core of it, they make the same observation. And that's this. Today, personal feelings, desires, tastes, and preferences have become all important. And pursuing those and expressing those is the route to personal happiness. The issue of feeling is all important. Okay, that's the first cultural artifact, job description, and the issue of feeling being all important. Think about another cultural artifact that has undergone tremendous change. That is technological innovation. Okay, I'm going to use the example of farming. I don't know how far back in time you'd have to go before you discovered that farming technology is very different today than it was then. I don't know how far back you have to go. You have to go back 500 years, 1,000 years. Eventually, you'll get back far enough where you realize farming today is very different than it was at such and such a date. You know, at such and such a date, you could say it was, comparatively speaking, primitive. Again, comparatively speaking, primitive. You're completely dependent on weather and seasons. Very little control over weather, control over the soil. Thus, in that time, whenever it was, very little control over whether or not the farmer's endeavors would succeed. Farmers in that particular time were subject to powers and forces beyond their control. And what did they do? They lived with it. They accepted the fact that there were certain laws of nature that they were subject to. Things are different today. With the advancement of agricultural technology, this given authority of the environment has become increasingly weakened. The development of irrigation means that water can be moved and stored and then used whenever necessary. Increasing knowledge of soil science, fertilizers, pesticides means that the land can be manipulated to yield more and better crops. More controversially, recent developments of genetics has allowed for the production of foods that are immune to certain conditions or parasites. So you notice the change. Notice the change. Now you might say, well, so what? These innovations are good for society. Well, whether or not they're good or bad isn't the issue I want to think about. What I want you to think about is this. Technological innovation has radically shaped how we think about the world and our place in it. It used to be that the world was an objectively authoritative place that we needed to conform to. Today, the world is much more a place containing raw materials that we do with as we please by our own power to our own purposes. All these technological developments have served to weaken the authority of the natural world and persuade human beings of their power. That is, reality now is something that we can manipulate. Technological innovation has trained us to think that reality is something we can manipulate according to our own wills and desires, not something we need to conform ourselves to or passively accept. Now, before I go on to the third cultural artifact, I want us to merge those first two together. Merge the changing attitudes towards job description and what it says about us with technological advancement and what it says about us. Personal feelings, desires, tastes, and preferences have become all important. Pursuing and expressing those is the route to personal fulfillment and happiness. At the same time, the world can be manipulated to serve my feelings, desires, tastes, and preferences. Let me give you an example of this. If I feel I am a woman, even though I am biologically male, I can be a woman. My desires and feelings are all important, and the world is my canvas. I can make myself into anyone or anything I please. And because satisfying my desires is morally right, I should be a woman without the world around me hindering me. Let me push this one step further before we go to the third artifact. If I declare myself to be gay, it would seem that as long as that does not prevent me from holding a job and voting and receiving an education, availing myself of all the necessities and comforts of life, there's little reason for me to want anything more. Why would I need my neighbors to affirm my homosexuality as a good thing? There's another change that has happened in society that answers that question. There's another change. And again, the cultural artifact is Snow White. I said Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. This really comes from Christopher Latch. Let me just read this quote. He says this, the narcissist, this is his label to describe what Charles Taylor calls as expressive individualism. The narcissist depends on others to validate his self-esteem. He cannot live without an admiring audience. His apparent freedom from family ties and institutional constraints does not free him to stand alone or to glory in his individuality. On the contrary, it contributes to his insecurity, which he can overcome only by seeing his grandiose self reflected in the attention of others or by attaching himself to those who radiate celebrity power and charisma. For the narcissist, the world is a mirror. The mirror that Latch mentions here is a reference to Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. The question our culture trains us to ask of the world around us is, mirror, mirror on the wall, who is the fairest of them all? And the answer that our culture has trained us to demand is, you are, however you want to define yourself. Okay, so let me back up just a minute. Let me recap. My feelings, my desires, tastes, and preferences are all important. Satisfying those is the route to happiness and fulfillment. The world is not an objectively authoritative place I need to submit to. Rather, it contains all the raw materials I need to manipulate into satisfying my feelings and desires. Now, what does this sound like? Who does this sound like? It sounds godlike to me. We live in a society that has deified or divinized the self. Cities, towns, communities are now populated by little gods. If I declare myself to be gay, it would seem that as long as that does not prevent me from holding a job and voting and receiving an education or availing myself of the necessities of life, comforts of life, the conveniences of life, there is little reason for me to want anything more. But we know that that's not the case anymore. Why would I need my neighbors to affirm my homosexuality as a good thing? Well, the answer is gods demand worship. Gods demand worship. For a Christian cake baker to refuse to bake a cake for a gay wedding is tantamount to treason, heresy. And therefore, they are deserving of the punishment for the heretic they are. See, gods define what are appropriate modes of worship. If baking a cake for my gay wedding is what I deem to be an appropriate mode of worship, and you refuse to do so, you are a heretic. And we all know what we do with heretics. We burn them at the stake. We cancel them. So the issue of feeling is now central. The world contains the raw materials needed to satisfy and express my desires. Because we are little gods, we demand recognition, and not to give it is heresy, treason, apostasy. These are the three things that have developed over the years. Now, I'm going to spend more time unpacking this in the next episode, but to whet your appetite, consider this. If the issue of feeling is central, personal tastes, desires, preferences, if all that is central, then matters of justice and injustice take a different form. To state it starkly, injustice is anything that makes me feel bad. Justice is anything that makes me feel good. In other words, we now live in a thoroughly therapeutic world. We live in a thoroughly therapeutic world. This isn't and shouldn't be surprising. Those of you who've been listening to my teaching or preaching or read the blogs over the years, I've talked about the fact that the number one religion in the world today is moralistic therapeutic deism. Moralistic therapeutic deism. I'm not going to unpack every element to the definition of that term that Christian Smith came up with, but one aspect is the therapeutic. That is, the pursuit of happiness is the ultimate good in the world today. The pursuit of happiness is the ultimate goal. Therefore, anything that hinders that, and by the way, I'm the only one who can decide what will make me happy and what won't. Anyone or anything that gets in the way of me achieving that, of realizing that, this is not just like an inconvenience or a hurdle that has to get around. No, this is a matter of justice and injustice. The issue of feeling is central. My tastes, my desires, my preferences are all important. The pursuit of those, the satisfaction of those, the expression of those is the route to personal fulfillment and happiness. And if at the same time I have been convinced that the world is my oyster, that the world contains the raw materials needed for me to manipulate to suit my desires, tastes, and preferences, to aid in satisfying those, then anyone or anything that inhibits me from bringing all that together, from using all that to achieve that, is in the end a matter of justice or injustice. Next time, we're going to take a look at applications of this. I've got 7, 8, 9 different applications of this where we see this taking place in our broader culture today. And we'll make the rubber meet the road. We'll get it down to street level and think through how that might work out as we live the Christian life, as we continue this journey that Jesus has called us on to be unique in the sense of reflecting his image and likeness to our world, living distinct lives, but at the same time being light to a world that desperately needs him. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next time.